Fuel with Marvin Frankel at his home on Wild Fern Drive, December 20th, 1987. The approximate time is 4 p.m. Marvin, can you go back to your earliest memories of your parents, your grandparents, where they were born, when they came to Youngstown, and where they lived?
Austria-Hungary, the portion of it being Hungary. They came to Youngstown. I don't know specifically why it was Youngstown instead of someplace else. Of course, I know they must have been in New York first because they came by ship. And I'm not so sure that they didn't come on two occasions, that the entire family came at one time. Although, as I recall, all the members of my father's family were born in Europe, none of them born after they came to this country. When my father and mother were married, my father had lived with his parents until he was married to my mother, and after their marriage they came to Youngstown, to a house on Madison Avenue, two doors away from what was then known as Home Street, which ran from Madison Avenue all the way downtown to Federal Street. Street became Fifth Avenue at Madison and continued north to city limits. My father and his brother, Max Frankel, cigar makers by trade. Their father was involved in a retail store with them on East Federal Street, where they made and sold the cigars. They had received their prior to being cigar makers, they were, like so many members of the Jewish community, peddlers. They carried and sold household items and personal items to people living on farms outside of the city. But at the time they were going to be cigar makers, they went to, individually, they went to a cigar manufacturer in Cleveland who made cigars in a carriage house in the back of his home. The man's name was Jacob Klein. One of his daughters became Mrs. Jo Lustig, and the niece, Rose Klein, became my father's wife. My mother, they were married in March of 1908, on the day that was known as Inauguration Day, because every 4 years the elected president of the United States became president on that particular day. But this, of course, much later changed to January, an early date in January. We lived, when I was born, the following year, September of 1909, we were living in that house, and we remained in this house until 1915, when we moved to a house which my father built on Fifth Avenue, corner of North Heights Avenue.
While you were living on Madison, can you remember some of your neighbors?
Quite a few. There was across from us the Mitch Brown family. Mitch Brown, a bachelor, lived with a group of sisters, none of whom married. There was a Ray Brown, teacher, Dora Brown, who was quite well known in the local, amongst the local teachers, Hannah Brown, who, as I recall, was quite active in both the sisterhood of Rhoda Sholem Temple and the Council of Jewish Women. There was a sister, Jeanette, who I believe was the youngest of the sisters. She was a social worker in Cleveland. And they happened to live next to the McManus family, downtown store, sort of a mini department store. Several doors away from us, there was the Barrett family, many of whose daughters were school teachers. And there was the Roth family, one of whose sons was Ben Roth, the attorney. There was the home of the Frankel, the Max Frankel family lived in. That was next to the Roth house. There were the Hamburgers, parents of the Hamburger Boys, who were moved to Pittsburgh and were wholesalers of electrical appliances. There was the Wilcoff family, the William Wilcoff family, who had three or four sons, most of all of whom were well known in the Jewish community. Arthur Wilcoff, Ralph Wilcoff, Lou Wilcoff. There was the Moyer family, the Morris Moyer family, the Friedman family, Henry Friedman, the bachelor son, and three daughters, one of whom became Mrs. Albert Leopold, one married to Max Brunswick, and the third daughter married to George Lowett. All these people lived east of us, going toward Elm Street. I can remember on the corner of Elm and Madison Avenue, there was a fire station, and every Saturday children used to go to the fire station to watch the horses being exercised. There was a stairway leading from the first floor to the second floor, and it was filled with children who stood there watching them exercise the horse. The equipment was moved out onto the driveway in front, and it was like watching, the famous horses in Indiana.
The lift is in.
Going west on Madison Avenue, there was the M.U. Guggenheim family. They had two daughters, Clarabelle and Irma, who became Irma Garson. And there was the Hoffman family, Morris Hoffman, and the Joseph Friedman family. Son is Arthur Friedman. Rita Weimer. There was the Jacobs family living across from them. And then there was an apartment building at the corner of 5th and Madison that was built by the Lustig family. Joe Lustig and his brother, Max Lustig, whose wife was Nettie Lustig. The apartment building remained there until it was torn down fairly recently, 10, 15, 20 years ago. When we moved to Fifth Avenue, I was just 6 years old, and I started in the first grade of Parmalee School, which which was located on Belmont Avenue at Broadway. And it used to be a very easy walk to and from school. I went there for 8 years, and some of the members of my class were Milton Clivens, Donald Fear, Oscar Niemann, Ruth Levy, as well as some others who became rather well known around town, like John Thomas, Richard Schumann. Jack Gridley, and some others that I probably forgot to mention.
How long were you at Parmalee?
I was at Parmalee for 8 years, and this was before we had any junior highs. There were no junior high schools yet. The one that was built, Hayes Junior High, had the Parmalee principal as its first principal, Mr. E.S. Freed. Also, when I was at Parmalee School, Harding School was open, and some of the Parmalee students, I believe those who lived above Crandall Avenue, for instance, had to change to Harding and finish up there after Parmalee. I finished at Parmalee in 1923, and from there I went to Rayon School for 4 years. Principal was E.F. Miller, who was well known in education circles, and of course it was the time when Rayon was sort of at its peak. We had a number of very well-known teachers who were able to take four years of Latin, 3 years of a foreign language, and you could be accepted in almost any college in the United States without entrance examinations if your standing at Rayon was high enough. I chose as a foreign language German. It was reintroduced in my freshman year. It had not been taught in public schools here since World War I. And I took 3 years of it and continued taking it when I was in college. I was a member of the class of 1927, was graduated June. I remember the commencement every year for Rayon, at least, was at the Palace Theater in the morning. From there it moved to Sandlot Auditorium.
Where did you go after Ray?
I went to Cornell University for 4 years. years, and then I took 2 years of graduate work at Harvard Business School in Cambridge. I received a master's degree from the business school in 1933, and I returned home. I returned to Youngstown to continue to live here up to the present. I had an interest in department store work, and I applied locally to both Strauss Hirschberg and McKelvey's. We were in the Depression. Stores were not taking on any additional people and replacing only the persons who left town or died. Oh, I suppose persons who reached the age where they felt they should retire. There's no such thing as having to retire at any particular age. There were several people there at that time who had been with Strauss's. For instance, 50 or more years, which is a lot of years to be in a particular company. Back to Youngstown to stay, mainly because it was something that my parents wanted me to do, to live here. Otherwise, if I hadn't been a dutiful son, I probably would have been elsewhere. But,
the problem of being an only child, partly.
Probably.
In those days, important. Marvin, can you tell us about your religious training in religious school?
My family was a member of the Children of Israel congregation, and it had no Sunday school, but I and some other children went to Road of Sholem Sunday school. There was a fee for that unless you were a member of the congregation. And I started in the first grade. I don't think the Sunday school had a kindergarten or a pre-kindergarten. And I went there to Sunday school 5 years. At that time, for at least 1 year, the superintendent of the Sunday school was Clarence Strauss. The rabbi of the temple at that time was Rabbi Philo, and as I recall, Nettie Simon was the secretary, and on Sundays the library in the temple was open for the students of Sunday school. That was in charge of Miss Betty Lyle, whose mother was Mrs. Samuel Lyle, a widow. When the Anchiamath Temple, which the Frankels were very active in getting started and built, when that temple opened, which was about in the early 1920s, I transferred from Rhoda Schoen Sunday School to the Anchiamath Sunday School. When I registered, I said that I had completed 6 years of Sunday school at Rhoda Schoen instead of 5 years, because I wanted to start there in the seventh grade. My cousin, Fred Ullman, who had married Madeline Frankel, was to be the teacher of that grade, and I wanted to be in his class. It so happened after the first year of Sunday school, he was changed to the eighth grade, so I had him in the eighth grade as my Sunday school teacher. Because of the fact that I had been bar mitzvahed, I did not continue with the Sunday school. My family felt that if a boy had been bar mitzvahed, it wasn't necessary to be confirmed, that the two were one pretty close to one and the same.
Was that the general opinion of the congregation?
It was about 50-50, I would say. Of course, the main reason why a person was disappointed that he wasn't going to be confirmed was because he wasn't going to get the presents, which he had received at the age of 13. Of course, there was no such thing as bat mitzvah. The girls had only confirmation. So in all probability, the confirmation class was a little top-heavy with girls.
Did you experience any anti-Semitism during this period in school, and in high school or grade school?
No.
In the Youngstown area, you didn't run into any form of anti-Semitism?
No. The only thing I can recall was that one of the clubs at Rayon School was the High Y Club, and it being connected with the YMCA restricted itself to Gentiles. There were no Jewish students in the High Y, I presume. All of the high wise in town at the high schools were the same way. But that was the only thing of this sort that I can recall.
when you moved, when you got into town and you were working in Strauss's, can you remember some of the merchants in the town, in the downtown area, or anywhere?
Yes. There were outside of the downtown. There were the neighborhood stores, the grocers and the druggists, and, the dry cleaners, and so on. But because the shopping plazas and the malls had not started as yet, downtown was the center of activity, and there were loads of stores selling menswear, and men's furnishings, and men's clothing, and there were loads of stores selling shoes, women's shops, although it seems to me that most of the women's apparel that was sold by the large specialty store like Livingston's, or the department store, Strauss's and McKelvey's. And that was not true with men's apparel, even though Strauss's and McKelvey's had large men's departments. There were a number of, theaters. While there were a few neighborhood theaters, the North Side, incidentally, did not have one. There were at least a half a dozen large movie palaces downtown. There were quite a few restaurants. There were confectioners. Quite a number of stores in all categories. There were even, I think, at least three large hardware stores located downtown.
Most of the action was downtown.
Most of the action was downtown. Theaters started at 11 o'clock in the morning. Women came downtown to have lunch in McKelvey's Tea Room and at Raver's. They would go spend hours downtown going from store to store, and they would often put in a full day until the husbands who worked downtown were ready to go home. They would go home with the husbands. One of the popular activities was window shopping, particularly on Sundays. I remember that we, as a family group, my father and mother and my aunt and her husband, myself, would have dinner upstairs at the Progress Club, which became the Commercial Club and then became known as Lieberman's. And after eating, if we were going to a movie, we would first take a walk around a few blocks and look at the windows. And we were accompanied by lots of other people who were doing the same thing.
On a Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And of course, all the streetcar lines terminated downtown, either on the square, I think most of them ended up on the square, or at the extremes of Federal Street.
There were no stores open downtown on Sunday.
No,
there were no restaurants.
There were no stores open. There were no stores open in the evening either. That didn't come into effect until World War II, when stores started staying open one night a week, Monday.
When you talk of theaters, do you ever remember a Yiddish theater in Youngstown?
No.
There have been some questions about the fact that there was at one time a Yiddish theater. We can't get any, can't seem to find information.
I remember only the theaters that had vaudeville on the Park Theater, which had traveling shows from New York. Traveling, the road companies.
Did you work an 8-hour day or?
As Strauss's, we worked, the store was open 6 days a week. We worked 6 days a week. The total number of hours that we worked might have been about 60. When I started, I'm speaking now about the 1930s. We were in a depression, and there was very little hiring of help, except to replace someone who left, someone who died, somebody retired, although I don't think that retiring was as popular then as it's been since. I recall that my starting weekly pay, regardless of the number of hours I worked, whether it was 60 or 50 or 65, was $10.50 for the week. And it was quite adequate in those days. During the period of the Depression, the NRA, the National Recovery Act, went into effect, and there was a minimum set which permitted me to receive $12.50 a week. If we had occasion to work in the evening, we were given what was called supper money. We could go around the corner to the American Lunch, or behind Strauss's on Commerce Street, a restaurant named Page's, and I believe McWeb's was on the square at that time. And we were given 50 cents for our dinner, and that was sufficient.
For a hot meal?
For a hot meal, probably a three-course meal. Soup and main course and dessert, which was probably ice cream or apple pie. There were a number of members of the community who were at Strauss's at that time. Neither Mr. Strauss Sr. nor Mr. Hirschberg were living. Clarence Strauss was the head of the store. There were a number of familiar persons there. George Thompson, Henry Goldstein, his brother Dave Goldstein, who was in charge of the basement store. Sam Rosenthal, who was well known in the community in later years. Arthur Einstein, his brother Sylvan, others such as Morris Black and Lester Lane, names that became more familiar as Strauss's grew. Strauss's had only one, there were no malt stores because there were no malts. Strauss's had a branch store in Newcastle, which was managed by Gerald Meyer. But there were a lot of well-known names. Downtown store was the Prince Company, and Ritter and Meyer, Squire shop. Maloney and Williams, Scott Company, William Kozel. There were a number of places where one could go for sweets. There was Friedman's, which I believe was originally on East Federal Street. When the brothers were together,
I think that's, I'm not real sure about that.
Near the Park Theater, yeah. Which was in the second block.
Right.
I think the Friedman's was in the first block. It seems to me that I recall being taken to the Park Theater and afterwards, after the matinee, stopping in at a Friedman's on the way to the square to get the streetcar back up to the north side.
There was a factory on this Federal too, upstairs, so the store probably was downstairs.
And then, of course, I remember when there was Martin Friedman's. Had one or more locations, including one, I think, when the Warner Theater opened, mm-hmm. right off the lobby, just as there was one off the lobby of Keith Palace Theater in the square. There were a number of jewelry stores. In fact, it's interesting that at one time there was a Cliven's Brothers, Milton Cliven's, and Cliven's Company, which was Jacob Cliven's and his son Harold.
Were they all connected, though? Were they like branches, or they were separate?
No, they were separate.
They were competing with one another.
They were competing with one another, yeah.
And there were a number of shoe stores. There were a number of shoe stores.
There were a number of shoe stores. The biggest one, when I was very small, was Smith and Sons, J.W. Smith and Sons. But at some time or other, it was surpassed in size by Lustig's, which became the dominant shoe store in the downtown. It seems to me that a number of the shoe stores were for women only. Possibly because they bought more pairs of shoes than men did. I know that at one time women's shoe departments in the department stores were very large, and pardon numerous. It seems to me that after I had been with Strauss's for about 10 years, the Strauss's sold shoes in the 6 or 7 different departments, most of them for women.
Well, they must have been different priced shoes, or?
Different priced shoes, different, well, I'm thinking of them for the shoe department for the younger women. There was a shoe department for staple shoes for older women, less fashionable shoes. There was a children's shoe department, separate. Eventually, other stores opened in neighborhoods and in shopping areas outside of downtown, these departments were consolidated, and there were fewer of them than there had been before.
Can you tell me anything about your involvement in the community, in the politics, the synagogue, business-wise? Did you have any interests?
No, I was not particularly interested. Well, I shouldn't say interested. I was not a doer, a worker. My time, I didn't join organizations like the Masons. I was not an elk. I never went into any service club. I wasn't active in Jewish Center or the Federation, except that there was a time when I used to be a member.
Three, testing, 1, 2, 3. More about the Frankel brothers as it evolved and from where it evolved.
After my grandfather and my father and Uncle Max Frankel being in the cigar business on East Federal Street for X number of years, they decided to move to the other side of the square and go into stop manufacturing cigars and go into the wholesaling and retailing of tobacco products, cigars, cigarettes, pipes, so forth, smokers' accessories. So they rented space on the first floor of the Federal Building, which was at the corner of West Federal and North Phelps Street, and opened up a rather large store, which this was around 1900, and it was very close to Woolworths, which was then a 5 and 10 cent store with nothing over 10 cents. Stambaugh Thompson's, right across the street from Ritter and Meyer, men's store. Sweetland, a confectionery store owned by several Greek brothers, possibly the, well, I don't think I should mention the name because I'm not sure it would be correct. Frankel Brothers Company carried on the wholesale portion of business in the basement, and the first floor was devoted to selling of tobacco products at retail. There was my uncle Max Frankel was known as the inside man. He was there every day until the store closed, which, as I recall hearing, was at 7 p.m. And my father was considered the outside man of the brothers because he was the one that called on the territory, which consisted of 6, 7, or 8 counties in Ohio and western Pennsylvania. There also were a few other salesmen who had locations to go to as far away as Steubenville, as far north as Ashtabula. There was all the counties which were outside of the county and outside of the territory that was considered Cleveland.
What did they use for transportation? What form of transportation?
I know that if my father went to Warren, for instance, to call on the customers, he went by train on the Erie and walked in Warren or used the streetcar, buses, whatever the city might have. I remember that my father, incidentally, never learned how to drive a car, never drove a car in his life. So it was my mother who drove the car until I was 16 and legally permitted to drive the car. But I recall that he would come back from Steubenville, let's say, if he had gone down to Steubenville, or wherever he went, we would go down to, if he came in after 7 o'clock in the evening, we would pick him up at the Erie station, or the Pennsylvania station, whatever train he used to go to that territory. It's interesting that I had never given that a thought until we speak about it today. I mean, closely associated with my father and uncle. Oh, by this time, my grandfather was out of the business completely, and he had lived with Julia and Louis Clafter. Julia was Julia Frankel Clafter, his daughter. He lived with her until his death in the early 1920s. But getting back to who was connected with the cigar stores, my father's nephews, Max Marx and Nate Marx, were active in the business. They also had some brothers who helped out. Their stepbrother, Mose Marx, and their own brother, Aaron Marx, who was in another business in Youngstown. I recall that among the persons of Jewish persuasion, there was Barney Weiss, who had, who on certain days a week went out and called on local trade, and there was also a Morris Stein, who was in charge of the putting up of the orders in the wholesale end of the business.
Was there much competition?
In the very early days of the store, there were a number of persons who worked for Frankel Brothers Company that left to start businesses of their own, such as Harry Chagrin, John Roseman, and Phil Sauber. Monroe Pollock. These firms were Chagrin and Roseman. There was a Clafter, a step brother of my uncle Louis Clafter, who was in the business with Clafter and Sauber. It was Abe Sauber and Philip Clafter. There was Pollock and Daugherty, which had Monroe Pollock and Saul Weinberg connected with them. So there was considerable competition, but to me the interesting thing was that most of these people got their start working for Frankel Brothers. Of course, as the years went on, the population of Youngstown grew, and there was demand for more of everything, including retail establishments in any particular field.
Tobacco wasn't a no-no then.
Tobacco was very acceptable, and during World War I, the soldiers were receiving cigarettes by the cartons as gifts from organizations and from individuals. I think possibly almost at a time when women were starting to smoke, that that would have been the peak of cigarette consumption in this country. Perhaps that's incorrect, but I don't have any figures from the National Institute of Cigarette Manufacturers.
Were your grandparents or father involved in other outside activities in the community?
My parents were. My father, at one time, was president of the Anshin Temple. My mother was president of the Anshiemuth Sisterhood. She succeeded her sister-in-law, Mrs. A.M. Frankel, who had been president since the of the Sisterhood, since the congregation was formed. My mother, Rose Frankel, was active in the early days of the Federation. In fact, I believe that she was the first woman head of the women's division of the Federation. I think it began at a time when she was working was active with the Federation.
I think she was a charter member of the Council of Jewish Women, too,
She could have been a charter member, but she was active. She was active with the Council of Jewish Women. Which was considerably larger in membership then than it's been in the last few decades.
True. Do you have any feelings about the survival or the of Israel or its politics?
No, I have no particular feelings that would be of interest.
And you don't feel that there's any particular person in your life that made the largest influence? Parent, teacher, a book?
Offhand, I can't think of anyone. I suppose I could say that my parents together, my father and mother, number one and number two influences.
Is there anyone in the community who you admire more than any you have a great admiration for?
Well, I think of Clarence Strauss as a person that I felt that way about for a great many years. I'm sure there have been some others since his time. Of course, he died in 1947. I remember that year very well because that was the year that Herta and I were married. He died in the spring. We were married in August of that year. There have been persons since then, I'm sure, that fit into that category, but I can't think of them offhand. But we have had some community leaders that have such as presidents of congregations and presidents of organizations, such as Stanley Engel, for instance, were outstanding. But I can't say that these are persons who began to influence me when I didn't influence as easily. I know what I mean. I don't know whether I expressed it correctly.
I think I kind of threw you a curve on that anyway. They're both there. Okay. Marvin, you want to tell us about your how and when and where you got interested in the theater?
Of course, when I was young, we didn't have radio, we didn't have television. Entertainment outside of a home consisted principally in going to movies and what were called legitimate stage attractions at several downtown theaters, one of which was the Opera House, the other was the Park Theater. I was very fond of going to the movies at one of six, seven, or eight downtown movie houses which we had operating. And as I got a little older, I was taken to Hippodrome, which showed B.F. Keith vaudeville. The Hippodrome, incidentally, was located in the arcade, which later became the Greyhound Bus Terminal Arcade. And I was also taken to suitable shows at the Park Theater, such as Thurston the Magician, a play based on the life of Abraham Lincoln, a play made from the novel Merton at the Movies, which came here with Glenn Hunter, who had the starring role. And that, as I recall, was the second show I saw at the Park Theater, Life of Lincoln, called A Man for the Ages. It was the first legitimate show I ever saw. Then, as I got older, I went to the Park Theater with a few of my friends. We would go on Saturday afternoon, sit upstairs in what probably was the balcony, first or second balcony. I remember seats were 50 cents up there, and the shows were musicals like Rosemarie and Student Prince, Blossom Time, and more recent ones like No No Nanette. The Park Theater at that time was managed by Joe Chagrin for a company that I believe was based in Pittsburgh. He was the house manager, and several of his sisters helped him by working in the box office. There were a few Wednesday matinees I went to when I was in Rayon School. I should have been in school, but after coming home for lunch, I didn't go back to school. I went down to the Park Theater to see something that was playing there. The Vagabond King was one thing I can remember. And then by that time, I was also getting into the Follies series, Greenwich Village Follies, shows which included comedians like Ed Wynn and the Howard brothers, a few of the touring companies of the Ziegfeld Follies came there. But the thing which I saw the most of were the movies which played here, and they used to play 3 days or 4 days. Each week had two different movies at each theater when pictures began to have sound and the actors and actresses spoke. That was a tremendous boost for attendance at the local theaters. And it went to the point where eventually, maybe within 1 or 2 years, every movie house in town had pictures with sound, music. We're getting more traveling stage shows. Prices were, well, during the 30s, prices were quite reasonable in comparison to what they became after the war. We had some events at Stambaugh Auditorium, but it was not really proper for, constructed properly for stage shows. It was really built for concerts and musical events. When I was in college, I was friendly with fellas who had come to Cornell from larger cities, and these fellows were theater buffs, and I guess I acquired some of my interest in the theater from them. Town and working left me less time to go to the movies except on weekends. I managed to keep on seeing a number of them each week. By this time I had become interested in collecting books on the performing arts, subjects like theater and the movies, vaudeville, a little bit on circus, a little bit on nightclubs, and I continued having that interest until the present time.
You spoke of the Opera House earlier. Where was the Opera House?
The Opera House was on the square. Right, the entrance to it was between what is now the side entrance of McCrory's and the square entrance to the Mahoning Bank Building. That was the entrance, and the theater ran east and west behind McCrory's to Borden Street, where Raver's restaurant was at one time on Borden Street. That was where the auditorium of the Opera House was.
Did that become part of the old market?
When it ceased being a theater, it became Olds Market. Mm-hmm. Olds Market had been on East Federal Street in the first block, and he moved to the site of the Opera House when it ceased being an Opera House.
Right, with that strange shape, that Olds Market.
Yes.
Down and then huge.
Yes. That's a very, very good memory for you to think of Olds having gone in there. I did remember it. I wouldn't have mentioned it though, because I.
Well, we had a candy concession. That's why I remember it. So, and that's where I worked.
Uh-huh.
When I was I worked there. Do you remember anything about the Warner family, or had they gone?
They were gone long before I would have had an opportunity to meet them. I remember them owning it, or perhaps even owned it, operating the Dome Theater, which was several doors away from Hazel Street. It was managed by the brother-in-law, David Robbins, who was married to Anna Warner, sister of the famous brothers. When Warner Theater was built, and the new one, well, the Warner, only one Warner Theater, when it was built and opened in the spring of 1931, Dave Robbins moved over from the Dome and was the manager of that theater. As he got older, his assistant did more of the work, and he was more of a host than anything else, I believe. But of course, Warner was the most beautiful of our downtown theaters, although we had several others that were very attractive, such as the State Theater on Federal Street, across from where the Dome Theater, and then, or should I say across from where McKelvey's had been, further up. The closest I ever came to the Warner Brothers was meeting Harry Warner at one time at the Warner Studio when I was in California visiting an uncle and aunt of mine on my mother's side of the family who lived in California. Read avidly and listened very intently whenever anything was said about the Warner Brothers, but I didn't have any personal contact with them.
Dave Robbins went on with other theaters besides the Warner Theater.
No.
What about the one in Warren?
The two in Warren were the brother, Dan Robbins. I think he was the youngest of the Robbins. I take that back. I think possibly Jack Robbins was the youngest of the Robbins brothers. Dave Robbins had nothing to do, as far as I know, with the theaters in Warren, the Robbins and the Daniel. Dan Robbins managed to name one of the two theaters after himself when it was built. Dave Robbins died here in Youngstown, and then his wife moved to, sometime or other after his death, moved to California. Lived more closely to her family.
They didn't have children.
They were childless.